Machine Music Podcast. Welcome to the first episode of Matechet, a new podcast for Machine Music. My name is Ron Bentovim. Happy you could join me. Sad it had to be under such weird, oppressively anxiety-inducing circumstances, such as whatever the fuck is happening with the world right now, but as we shall see, somehow appropriate given what I think I want to do with this thing. Just before I do whatever it is that I do, I'd like to thank all of Machine Music, I should say, wonderful Patreon supporters who have not only aided me all this time, but have also enabled me to even, you know, get the gear that I'm using here. If you feel like being part of the proverbial team, check out my Patreon at patreon.com/machinemusic. So what is the plan? This is going to be a music podcast, predominantly about metal, hardcore, and heavy music in general, since that's what I've been listening to all my life and writing about for at least, or for the last decade or so. However, this is not going to be a ranking my best metal albums that feature a pyramid on the cover type podcast, nor will it be a recommendations podcast. There are plenty of that on other websites, as well as on my own website, machinemusic.net, and on the website's various social media iterations. I think at the end of each episode, mention a few musicians that I feel like mentioning, perhaps even play a song, but that's the extent of that. But before I talk about what I will do, I'd like to introduce myself briefly. My name is again Ron. I've been writing my Machine Music blog since May of 2010. In the last few years, I've moved from what used to be a straight recommendations and the odd feature to a focus on in-depth content, including more notably longer interviews with the artists that I find the most interesting in the contemporary metal, hardcore, noise, or what have you world. So that's step one. Step two is that during that time, I also wrote and completed my PhD in English literature with a focus on post-war, post-traumatic, and generally a fascination with disaster and the kind of art that comes out of pain, disaster, and torment. I've spent the last few years trying, basically, to find an academic position, not as successfully, while continuing to write and research this basic relationship between violence and writing. There are two streams where these two streams converge, pun intended, is the process that has begun recently for me is to asking the kind of questions I ask within, I guess, a more academic, philosophical framework and transplant them into the metal world and more generally into music. This was always a trait of my quote-unquote criticism, if that's what you want to call it, but over time it has really taken over, culminating for now in my Albums of the Decade series of interviews, which you can check out on machinemusic.net. This podcast, Matechet, Hebrew for metal, is meant to be a continuation of that impetus using different means. And really, other than everything I've just said, I have very little idea of what that entails. And I should add, I have very little idea what I'm doing right now. My setup is horrid. I'm in my bedroom right now. My kids, self-isolating and all that, are in the next room. This is not ideal. I have no idea how to record or edit a podcast, but I'll hopefully learn with time. As to the content, sometimes it'll include a short interview, and other times I'll talk and perhaps insert pieces of past interviews in a more of an essay form. And knowing myself and how I am as a person and as a lecturer, it might also consist of me rambling my way into oblivion, replete with multiple references to Megadeth. Each time I choose a topic or theme, and I'll see how many angles I can use to attack it, I'll exhaust it, I'll see how many questions I want to ask about it. Maybe if you had suggestions about the same questions, I'll try to do other things with it. But once that is stagnant and stale and boring to me, I'll just move on to the next concept. Now, what I was going to do before COVID-19 sabotaged the modern world pretty much, was to begin with a certain topic. And I'm still hanging on to that, even though the cards have been somewhat shuffled, but suddenly that original topic, at least at the time, seemed kind of stupid, and I thought I might focus on something more relevant that has to do with my research about trauma and disaster and death, since that seems so relevant these days, and I might go there. possibly very soon if there's a demand for that, or if I feel like it. But I thought I'd take a more circumvent route into some of the more core questions via the concept that I wanted to begin with which is authenticity, and kind of any kind of neighboring concept that has to do with authenticity, such as artistic freedom, artistic tradition, limits, and so on. So I should say that one digression I have to make here is that I guess I work differently when I'm anxious. And this is an anxious time for me, and I assume in what has to be a first in our lifetime, or at least my lifetime, anxious for everyone listening, regardless of where they are. And since I live in a tense place, and since I'm not, I shouldn't say used to being anxious about, you know, death and things like that, but I feel like part of my personal tradition, if I can use that word, is death, and being anxious about death, and that tradition somehow morphed into what I research and what I listen to. I know myself in these times. And one of the things that comes out of me is that I have to do things that I feel like prop me up. For a while that was writing. It still is the case. I'm also an author, quote unquote. I wrote a novella in Hebrew, if you feel like learning Semitic languages. And so I guess this podcast, even though I planned it before this came along, is just an idea of how to kind of expand an existing discussion on my website about all these things. It became a thing of necessity. So I guess I'm going to try to strike a very delicate balance here. Sorry, between, you know, writing this stuff out, scripting it, having a general idea of what I want to say, and riffing. I want to keep the riffing to a minimum because I know how I get when I get there, and it's not necessarily interesting, but that's basically where this is it. So I want to still begin with a discussion of authenticity. And what I mean by that is I began to think about authenticity in terms of, you know, I was never a part of a scene. I was always not afraid, but I always felt I didn't fit into, say, punk and hardcore scenes. And I never really grew up into a metal scene. I had friends in that scene, but I was always the kind of guy that listened to music in his bedroom, basically, and went to shows. But it was never a social thing for me. And I felt like once the social thing became apparent to me, and once my own, I guess I could say, opposition to it became apparent as well, more and more, that's one way in which authenticity kind of came in, because I felt like you had to be a real metalhead with the battle jacket and the patches. You had to be a real punk with a mohawk and, you know, whatever the safety pins. And if you're neither, you're a poser. And so that in itself is already a discussion of authenticity, right? How are you living the life, right? Are you a lifer? Are you committed? But later on, that more conceptually, that kind of, I guess, condensed around the idea of certain genres musically seeming to lend themselves more to authenticity. And what I mean by that is, say, if you're Jay-Z or if you're a rapper who sings about, you know, life as a drug dealer, it's very important for you to be a real drug dealer, or to at least have some passing experience with that. Otherwise, it's almost as if the aesthetic quality of your work is damaged by that, right? If you're a blues man, and you're like from this early 20th century Library of Congress field recording, and it turns out you're not the real deal, turns out you haven't been working the fields, turns out you've never experienced pain, you were this, I don't know, a college graduate, whatever, that again seems, that would detract from you as an artist. And I think in more modern terms, punk has that, at least in certain hardcore scenes, where living the life is a part of the aesthetic, and also in certain forms of metal. Some certain forms of metal, it's not the case, right? So if you're into power metal, you don't have to actually be a dragon slayer. That would be a very difficult thing to do. But at least in the early forms of black metal, at least Norwegian black metal, it was very important that you were, say, Norwegian. It was very important that you were anti-Christian. And so certain biographical traits were an enhancement to the aesthetics. And I think that this they, a lot of people who are not Norwegian, this always is an amusing fact to me. You know, I live in Israel. A lot of Israelis who hate so-called poser black metal bands from, I don't know, France or California. And I'm like, what? Who? What? How does that, how do you get to decide on the biographical or geographical or cultural authenticity of anything, right? So obviously this is not just a simplified form of where you were born, what is your culture, which lends itself to kind of the extreme version of authenticity, which is fascism and nationalism, right? And that's not, we might get to those topics. I wrote a piece about this at the time about Magua, which you can find on the website, but that's not the entirety of the metal scene, even though it is a very prominent and very disturbing aspect of it. This fidelity to a physical anchor, which could be reduced in terms to terms of race and so on, or religion or lack thereof, right? And so it obviously isn't just that simplified terms. There's also the sense that people like Fenris or people like Varg, right? They know that whatever authentic lineage they're talking about isn't necessarily just a racial one, even though in Varg's case, it seems to be very important to be a racial one, but is also a cultural one, right? That they are connected to their past through cultural production. And I am quite interested in that latter sense of authenticity. But I think in many terms, metal music, and I think heavy music in general, is considered a kind of rebellion in subject matter, whether political, anti-religious, anti-conformist, in certain aesthetic tropes, right? Even the idea of distorted vocals, like the growl, distorted guitar work, you know, heavily treated or heavily untreated instrumentation, speed, the way you dress. These are all forms of saying something. You know, whatever that came before us was not good enough, was weak, and so on. And that's part of any kind of evolution. But I think in metal and in heavy music, it's also goes hand in hand with the sense of rebellion. On the other hand, metal and other forms of heavy music are steeped in tradition, whether in subject matter, again, medieval, classical, dragon slaying. That's not, you know, from the ether. In certain aesthetical tropes, right? The pop form versus reprise and all these things, classical music even, and even in style and dress, right? So because sometimes we look at long-haired metalheads as being rebellious, but in another sense, they're also mimicking traditional forms of dress and hairstyle. And obviously there's another tradition of rebellion, which seems tricky, at least at first, to conceive of resistance as a forming of tradition over time. But it's an apparent feature of certain genres, right? Such as punk's admiration for past social justice advocates, as well as more conscious wings of rap and hip hop, right? So it wouldn't be rare to hear a conscious hip hopper or rapper discuss people like, you know, Martin Luther King or Rosa Parks or Harriet Tubman. These are figures that are part of a tradition of resistance that seem to be a very important part of that aesthetical tradition. I think in rock and metal, a very prominent version of this would be Rage Against the Machine. And I would love to, I pretty much would like to talk about that duality, right, between tradition and freedom or rebellion. What interests me the most, however, is when those concepts become confused. When following tradition becomes a type of freedom, for instance, and when rebellion stagnates into a severe and sometimes violent form of tradition. And somewhere in the middle part of the battle between these ideas is the idea of authenticity that I'm interested in, right? Because the artists that I find myself drawn to and the music that I find myself drawn to is confusing in that way, right? You have bands like, you know, the American New York based experimental band KO-Dot, who are obviously, you know, super cerebral, super intricate, super, you know, theoretical sometimes about their implementation almost sometimes of music, but they're fascinated with certain forms of tradition, right? Like pop melodies and these kind of production traditions and the feel of music, the sheen of music. So there's a duality there between being fascinated with tradition and while subverting that tradition, and also then being fascinated with a tradition of subverting tradition, if that makes sense. And so is being authentic representing who you are in terms of biography, gender, history, or psychology? If you're a man, or if you identify as a man, do you have to sing about men things? If you're an American, do you have to sing about American things? And obviously, as to kind of Scandinavian metal, do you have to be Finnish or Swedish or Norwegian to make for certain types of music? Is being authentic being free to do whatever it is you want to do? I think some of the artists I admire the most are authentic in that they do whatever. I think two standout examples of that would be a band like Ulver, a band like Killing Joke, right? Bands that evolve kind of sounds like, you know, the earlier stuff was bad and the latter stuff was better, but they change. And a lot of times, some of the authors that I've interviewed in the past, and I'll show clippings or I'll play clippings of those interviews, such as the interview I did with Devin Townsend a few years ago, who's another example of an artist who has been very prolific and very different in his approaches. They'll say, I'm a different person, right? I can't make the same music at 37 that I did when I was 17. And that sounds like a simplistic answer, and to an extent it is a simplistic answer, because it shows to us what the author or artist is thinking, you know, when he's looking at his own catalog. But what in reality he's doing, or she, or whoever it may be, regardless of what they tell themselves, what the story is, what they're doing in fact seems to be an actualization of their freedom at that moment. Right. So when I was 17, given freedom, I would have chosen to express myself in a very specific way. And when I was 37, given freedom, I would have chosen to express myself in a very different way. And now at, I guess I should say 39, just had my birthday, my choice of expression involves this, for instance, right? A podcast. I know it's weird that I'm equating myself with Devin Townsend and Ulver that way, but I think that basic structure is one that's found in many different forms, right? That whatever it is that you feel compelled to do that interests you, whether because of pain or because of beauty or because of serenity or because of sadness or joy, is what you do. And often once you do it, it's not that interesting to you anymore because it's been actualized, it's been done. And once that something that's not interesting has exhausted itself, then really there's no good reason for you to continue doing it, other than obviously money, which I will never have to worry about, and most of the bands and artists that I will discuss will never have to worry about. But that is obviously been a key factor in bands sustaining a not so varied form of aesthetic production, because, you know, they have a very specific fan base, very specific market, and any kind of going slightly left or right of that will lose them basically their livelihood. So there's that as well. And so what I'd like to do now is try to kind of first stab this. This is not going to be a perfect first episode because I have never done this before. But one of the first kind of stabs at this would be to take a few of the remarks that came up in interviews that I've done, some of them further back, some of them more recent as part of the Albums of the Decade project, and see how we can use those comments to kind of build on a larger discussion of authenticity that I'm interested in. I should apologize in advance that, you know, I'm trying in a very imperfect way to sustain some kind of sense of fidelity, you know, sound-wise, sound quality to this thing, even though I'm doing this in my bedroom, yada, yada, yada. The recordings from older interviews before I got any kind of good equipment that are all basically recorded through the speakerphone of my phone in my car are not going to sound great. I'm going to keep them to as short as possible, so you know your ears don't grate, hopefully for too long. But it has to be said that some of these sound kind of crappy. But it was important for me to bring them in their original form because, you know, that's all I have. If I had it better, I'd do it better. But rest assured, everything that is recorded from the past week or so onward will sound much better. And so the first kind of interesting remark I want to play here is from a recent, relatively recent interview with Aaron Weaver, drummer and co-founder of the American black metal band Wolves in a Throne Room, that was conducted as part of the Albums of the Decade, a project regarding their album Celestial Lineage. And in that interview, I asked Aaron about this idea of authenticity, the centrality of authenticity to black metal, and how he feels that conveys itself. And so let's listen to that clip and we'll get back to it in a second. Because a lot is made in music, and maybe black metal is one of those genres in which that discussion is being had, but I think it's others as well, that where, you know, this idea of authenticity is very important. The expression of an authentic state of mind or state of being. And so I guess what comes from what you're saying is that there's a possibility that there is a way of being authentic that isn't being, you know, anchored by physical existence. In other words, that you can be authentic exactly by tapping in to the, what you are calling the spirit world in a way.
Yeah, or at least, you know, authentically projecting the story that you are, you know. Yeah. I don't know. I've always thought that it was funny that black metal and West Coast gangster rap appeared at the same time. They got a lot in common in that, you know, so much of it is how well one can posture or how well one can weave an illusion of authenticity.
Yeah.
You know, that's the craft. That's the art of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and no one really wants to look at the man behind the curtain. And in my experience, you know, meeting all of these people that make the music, it's a mix. There's some people who it's very much a theatrical presentation.
Yeah.
And there's definitely other people who are deeply in it and are possessed or, you know, it's not an act at all. It's even beyond being authentic or inauthentic. It's just coming from a very deep wellspring. But to the listener, it's all the same. It doesn't really matter what the experience of the creator is.
Yeah.
Because once, you know, you put on a piece of music, it becomes yours, and it becomes about your own interaction with that with that artifact.
I think that's a very interesting remark, Aaron, made there, and for two reasons. And I think it's actually a very good clip to begin with, so good for me. But first is that the emphasis isn't on the authenticity of biography. As Aaron claims, that's sketchy, right? Sometimes there is an authentic biographical entity there, sometimes there isn't. The focus is not on how authentic you are, but how authentically can you create a story that may be your story. And actually, I think it is important that it is your story. Maybe that is one important point of authenticity, that it's a story you want to tell, either about yourself or about the world, or about what you imagine the world to be. And so the emphasis in that interesting comparison Aaron makes between black metal and gangster rap, or West Coast gangster rap, is that there is a certain sense of posturing. There is a sense of weaving an illusion, but also I think an indication of that some illusions are weaved better than others, and that maybe authenticity lies there in the successful weaving of an illusion of a story, of an authentic story. And another thing that's important here, and I think is one issue that will kind of accompany us as long as we're talking about authenticity, but also to an extent further, is this idea of why does it matter? There is a heated controversy, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, between the kind of the importance of biography in appreciating art and metal specifically, right? Does it matter that Varg Vikernes is a nationalist and a racist? Does it matter that, you know, Miguá have illicit, so-called, alleged ties to fascist, other fascist bands or bands that are more explicitly fascist? Does it matter whether or not someone who wrote the music that you're listening to is an abuser or has committed sexual misconduct or even rape or at least been excused, right? So do these things matter when we study music? Now, I don't have an answer for that, at least for not right, not for not right now. This is not a cop-out. This is more my way of saying that this longer project is going to be dealing with that as well. But what Aaron is saying basically is that really it doesn't really matter whether Ice Cube at the privacy of his own home is a gangster. And it really, really doesn't matter whether or not, you know, Fenriz or, you know, Austin Lunn of Panopticon are actually the people their music seems to lead us to think they are. What matters is that you believe the music. And I don't know what I think about that, but I think it's a very interesting and very important point to raise at this point of our discussion. Now, one other point I think I find interesting in this discussion of authenticity, and here you may gain an authentic glimpses of my children reading a story in the background. Never mind. This idea that something about heavy music, some elements of heavy music, either lend themselves to be experienced as authentic or are even there because their creators perceive them to be authentic. And here I mean that part of heavy music which we call heavy. It could be the guitars, distorted vocals. It could be the lack of production. It could be suspense. It could be speed. It could be the way the drums are played. It could be any one of many things. But I have a feeling, and this is going to be, again, a lot of seeds are going to be being planted in this first episode that will be revisited later, hopefully. I have a feeling that there is a connection between the violence and heaviness that heavy music seems to deliver and sometimes promise to this idea of authenticity. That people listen to metal, people listen to noise, people listen to the hardcore because it feels realer than other kinds of music, and that is important, that the sense of realness. This is all leading up to another clip that I'd like to play for you right now, which is of a much older interview. This is in fact the first, not the first, but one of the first ones that I did in recent years with Greg Anderson, who is obviously well known for his bands like Goatsnake and Sun, Burning Witch, but also known as a very prominent label head for a very prominent label in the underground, Southern Lorne Recordings. And at one point of our interview, which we conducted, I think, 5 years ago, and the interview was centered on the label, I should say, I asked him if there was anything he felt was common, or like a common thread between Southern Lorne artists, because, you know, you have many different styles of bands. And one of the things he emphasized was intensity and darkness, which were two things he felt were very important for him when he came into the hardcore scene at first in the 80s. And then when I pressed him further regarding this question of realness or authenticity, that, you know, things can't be intense or dark if they feel fake. And so I asked him about how important it was for him that his bands felt real. And this is what he had to say.
I mean, it has to feel real. It has to feel authentic. Otherwise, the intensity doesn't really, or the darkness really, they don't really translate that well when it's not believable, I guess, right? So it needs to be...
Well, that's the thing, yeah. I mean, and that's another thing. I mean, that's to me is really sort of a, that's really another, that's a overall strong characteristic of most good underground music that exists, you know?
Yeah.
And like I said, you know, I mentioned before about music that I'd passed on, and a lot of that, to me, you know, for whatever reason, didn't come across as actually being genuine or real. So, and that's another thing that, you know, that's another thing that can go a long ways, I think, with playing music, is like if it's real and it's from the heart, it's gonna find an audience, or it has a purpose.
Right.
To me, if it's like manufactured or in a way that is, you know, not genuine, then, you know, to me, it's very possible that it could cross over to a commercial audience. But, you know, that kind of music has no place in
right.
in the independent and underground music scene.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's not. I have no time for that, and that's not. It doesn't. That kind of stuff doesn't mean anything to me.
Again, for different reasons, this is a great clip, or a great insert, I don't know what the fuck you call it. But and the reason it is great is because it does highlight something that I think a lot of people love in heavy or what Greg calls here underground, intense music. And one of the common threads I have in all my interviews, I always have that first introductory question, which is, you know, if you remember a song or an album that changed the way you thought about music. And a lot of times musicians that are from, you know, heavy scenes focus on that one album that really kind of bewildered them because of its intensity and heaviness. So I think a lot of people come to heavy music, I think myself included, because it feels like something, like a punch, like, I don't know, like something is visceral there, something is physical there. They don't think of it in terms of realness, because that's weird, right? But there are moments, I should say, even in my own kind of biography, where musical moments are very memorable to me because they felt real. I think one of the ones that stand out is the famous kind of ending of Korn's debut album, where Jonathan Davis can be found or can be heard kind of melting down almost over the memory of his own sexual abuses as a child, and so I remember that moment. It's shocking, and it's almost like pornography. You don't want to look. It's hideous, and yet there's something riveting about a moment that seems real. You know, you can feel the embarrassment of the band behind. You can feel that it's an awkward moment. They're trying to kind of improv something around him, basically kind of crumbling, you know, in that moment. There's something very effective about that. Now, not all metal music, I should say, not a very small group of metal music is really built on that kind of emotional vulnerability. A lot of metal music seems to be a lot about, you know, confidence and power. And yet that basic idea that metal or hardcore or real, that you escape what Greg is calling the commercial, you know, the market industry into the hands or into the arms of reality with music that means something, that is about something, that it stands for something. I think that's a very common thread. And so here, after Greg's insert, I think it's clear that we're talking about authenticity as an aesthetical trope or as an element, right? You hear it in the music and it makes you love the music just because it feels that much more real. And again, if we combine Aaron and Greg here, then what it really means is that whatever it is you hear and that you experience is real, is made to seem real. Even if it is real, whether it is real or it isn't, is less the issue than it is the fact that it's effective as a mode of communication of art. Now, again, this is at the beginning of something, an inception of something. This is going to be a very loose format for me. But I think that general terms next time, I think I want to start expanding on this through those artists that I feel kind of flaunt or highlight a lack of authenticity. All right. And again, I'm not a huge Man of War fan, so this is not going to be about fantasy that way. I'm sure there are other people who talk about that music in those terms. It's just not a musical genre that appeals to me personally, for the most part. But I'm more interested in a kind of the ways in which art kind of reflects on its own artifice, reflects on its own existence as something that is made. For example, that, you know, breakdown, Jonathan Davis's breakdown I just mentioned, it's still, you know, experienced within the confines of an album. There was still a decision made to include that in the album. There's a decision made by the band members to play music while it's happening. And it's not just out of nowhere a moment of just like sheer pain. It is still kind of packed within an art form. And so I'm interested in that. And I'd like to see what artists moving forward are interested in highlighting the inauthentic aspect of what they're doing, at least in terms of biography. And so I think that's us for now. I mentioned at first I might include a song at the end of each of these, so I will, and I'll mention that song in a moment. For that, thank you for listening. If you were listening, follow Machine Music wherever Machine Music exists, machinemusic.net, Instagram, Facebook, and Spotify. Tell your friends, whatever, don't tell them, I don't care. I mean, I do, don't do that. And that's it. The closing song will be by the band Kesef, who is one of the greatest bands that ever existed, an Israeli band that is very difficult to define. I just love them. And one of the members of Kesef, a dear friend, is also the person who penned, if you will, the intro riff to this podcast. So I'd like to thank him for that as well. Check Kesef out. They're the best. And see you next time.